This is The Pulse, stories about the people and places at the heart of health and science. I'm Maiken Scott. This story is from our episode about the rise of YouTube. You can find us wherever you get your podcasts. When I go on YouTube, everything I see at first is pink. It's all makeup, clothes, pretty bedrooms with fluffy pillows. That's because it's mostly my 14-year-old daughter who is using YouTube, and the homepage is customized based on what she watches. Algorithms decide what gets the prime real estate on YouTube, and on some level, that's a good thing. They filter the content to our liking and help us pick. But of course, this becomes a game of sorts. Clicks beget more clicks, and creators try every which way to get the algorithm to favor their content. In the early days of YouTube, there was a team of humans in charge of picking videos to feature on the homepage. And some people are pushing back against the idea that algorithms should decide what's popular. Alan Yu has more.
In 2006, Mia Qualiarello's job at YouTube was to hire and lead a team of people called Cool Hunters. Their job was to find interesting videos that were bubbling up in music, news, film, comedy, or beauty to feature on YouTube's homepage.
Felt like I found a diamond in the rough. Like, it was so exciting to find content that was like interesting and creative.
These were videos that were not immediately popular, but the Cool Hunters thought they deserved a larger audience.
There's like a music video, like a techno, fake techno music video called like My Hands Are Bananas.
My hands are bananas, your hands are bananas, my hands are
Geriatric 1927, Peter Oakley, a darling older man in England who was doing these great vlogs.
I was born in 1927, and of course my young life was spent when World War II was happening.
Mia stressed that she and the other Cool Hunters did not want to pick winners and losers.
YouTube did not want people to be the kingmakers of the site.
So they were also part of the communities they were in charge of watching. For instance, the person looking out for great new comedy videos was someone who made comedy videos himself and knew other comedians well. Then Google bought YouTube in November of 2006. A while after that, things began to change. Executives wanted the site to suggest the kinds of videos that would keep people on the platform longer. Picking something that was cool, different, or artsy was no longer in demand.
I always felt like a gazelle on the Serengeti being hunted by lions who were like the suits, the engineers, and the algorithms who were like always salivating over like what little real estate we had on the homepage and really wanted to optimize the site. I felt like my team's expertise and purpose was not entirely appreciated once we got acquired by Google. I mean, it would be a matter of time before we would be deemed like obsolete.
Mia says she and her team were proud of building relationships in the communities they were part of and featuring videos that might not have made it to the homepage based on clicks. However, she also says it was not easy to prove to Google that they were making money for YouTube. The company disbanded the Cool Hunters in 2010. Mia left the next year. YouTube is, of course, not the only place where algorithms decide what users see. This happens across platforms like Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, Spotify, and Netflix. And while this means people can get a stream of content tailored to their likes and interests, it also means that something else gets lost, argues Miguel Gomez. He had worked at a branch of TLA, a small video store chain, just outside Philadelphia since the late 1990s. In 2012, the chain closed, so he bought the store and renamed it Viva Video.
It was a decision that most saw as foolish.
Miguel says he and his colleagues developed a customer base of people who wanted to talk to other film lovers and choose movies that could expand their horizons.
Like, there's a movie, Reuben and Ed, that I love a ton. That's this very strange comedy from the 90s with Crispin Glover. He's a guy, his cat has died. He wants to go bury it out in the desert, kind of has to befriend this other fella for this weird road trip out into the desert to bury his cat. And I remember this is something like I recommended to this woman, Susan, who tend to be much more like art film directed. So it's not the sort of thing that's going to show up on your algorithm. Like if you like, I don't know, Godard, you're not going to get Ruben and Ed necessarily pushed to you.
He says algorithms thus far have not been able to account for taste, especially not the wild card of having a group of people with various different tastes who might recommend something you would never think to look for.
There is a clerk there who's a friend of mine, Abe, who would recommend Koyaanisqatsi to anybody.
This is an experimental 1980s art movie with no plot, no dialogue, and no characters. It consists of slow motion and time-lapse videos like rocket launches, bats flying, clouds floating, people walking, set to music by famous American composer Philip Glass.
If you are coming in with your kid for a sleepover, he would tell you to take Koyaanisqatsi. To some degree, that's a little insane, but it's also awesome that, like, if Abe's around, everybody that might possibly have an interest in Koyaanisqatsi is going to hear about it and watch it.
That movie is available on streaming platforms, though I'm not sure what combination of interests would be required for this movie to come up in someone's suggested queue. Algorithms also cannot build relationships the same way a human can, says Brian Way, who used to be a manager at the video store with Miguel.
I had a mom come into the store who's trying to connect with her teenage son, and she said, I would like to watch a comedy, but he wants to watch a spy movie. Like, what do you think he would recommend? And I just said, like, The Man from U.N.C.L.E. came out pretty recently. Have you guys seen that? And she said, no. And then she watched it and came back the next day, and she said, that was perfect. It was exactly what we both wanted. And the thing that I love about that in particular is, like, it's one thing to just suggest a movie to a person. It's quite another to, like, get to know that person on a granular level and understand not only what makes them tick, but, like, what specifically they're looking for, what kind of experience they want. And the great part about that as a video store clerk is that there's accountability. That person takes that recommendation from you, and they're going to bring the movie back, and they're going to tell you what they thought of it.
Despite those relationships, the video store Viva Video, like many others, did not last. It lost money starting in around 2018. Miguel and another investor kept it going for a while. They had loyal customers until the end, but closed in 2021 when their landlord got a much better offer on the property. The heyday of video stores may be long over, but people are now pushing back against algorithm-driven culture in different ways, says Kyle Chaker, a staff writer at The New Yorker.
I think we've gone through this period in the 2010s of reaching peak algorithm, and we now kind of understand why algorithmic recommendations are sometimes bad, or we shouldn't rely on them completely.
Kyle says he sees this resistance to algorithms in the rise of fashion newsletters, where people can find clothing recommendations from a specific person they pay to support. He sees this in DJs who have enough people who like their taste in music that they make money from followers. Kyle wrote the recent book Filter World, How Algorithms Flattened Culture. He says, of course, what some people call taste, others would call bias.
The gatekeepers of a record label or an art museum are definitely making choices based on their own experiences and perspectives. But I think the machine curation also has this flaw too, of machine curation really only works by engagement. So things that are already popular become more popular. But what I find really powerful about human curators is their ability to surface the weird culture, the obscure stuff, really niche finds that they like, and then pass it on to more people. And that's kind of how culture gets developed and innovates at all.
Kyle says there are some platforms that have a good balance of humans and algorithms suggesting what to watch or listen to.
You have smaller platforms like NTS or Boiler Room, which highlight niche musical voices in a cool way, even as they broadcast online. And you have streaming services like Criterion or Adagio, which kind of curate and highlight specific bodies of culture. So Adagio streams only classical music, and Criterion is an art film version of Netflix.
Mia, who used to lead the Cool Hunters at YouTube, ultimately left to become head of creator community at Flipboard. It's an app and platform that curates online content like news stories, social media posts, and videos. Flipboard has more than 30,000 feeds that users can follow and customize. Algorithms pick the posts in the feeds, but the most high-profile ones, like news, politics, and tech, get human attention as well.
We often talk about like curation at Flipboard as a layer cake, and you don't always know like what the ingredients of the cake are. So there's a lot of like wizard behind the curtain tweaking that goes on to make sure that what's being surfaced is high quality.
Kyle says smaller, more niche platforms do not come anywhere near close to the size of platforms like Netflix, Spotify, or YouTube. But he sees that as a feature, not a bug.
I think there is a limit to the scale of human curation, but I also think through the social media era of the 2010s, we learned that infinite scale is bad. Like, infinite scale is not something that we should aspire to. I don't think there should be a platform like Facebook or TikTok that works for a billion people. It just seems to have too many negative consequences and too much of a homogenizing force for what gets broadcast across it.
That story was reported by Alan Yu.